So this bolt of lightning shot across the universe and inspired me with the idea that we have to do a podcast. And that's what I wanted to tell you. We should do a podcast. Okay, bye.
I hit the button.
I hit it too. I hit the button.
Oh, thank the good Lord above.
I was going to launch into something, and then I realized we have to say what we're doing.
Wait, yes. Yeah. Welcome to our podcast. I'm Ned, and this is Meg, and this is our podcast called Feature Creep, :
Built-in microwave, semicolon.
Ned and Meg workshop a new fun segment for you. Yeah.
Yeah.
We got a website, fcbm.io. We've got, you can email Dana, D-A-N-A at fcbm.io. Dana is the CEO and founder of this podcast. It's all her fault, and she'd love to hear all your opinions about the stupid shit we say and how important it is to your life and how it's life-changing, or how it's just ruined everything for you and you just want to get on the fucking internet and blast somebody you don't know. Also good. We're here for it. And this new segment is basically themed. Well, go ahead.
Themed advice. We're going to tell you how to live.
Yeah, we're going to tell you. Yeah, two a-holes tell you how to live.
Two assholes tell you how to live in a number of interesting contexts.
Yeah, so we've got two already kind of lined up, which was...
Butter woke.
Butter woke is really good. I also like two pseudoscientists tell you how to live. And then the one that I've recently... Two straight edge people tell you how to live. I like that one as well.
I have to quick work up my insufferability for that one.
Yeah.
So the butter woke one.
Yes.
Well, that came from a conversation that we were having the other day. So I have switched off of dairy butter and dairy milk.
Oh yes.
Even though I was raised on it, and I think at one point in my life, if you had like taken a sample of me and run it through a mass spectrometer, it would have been like 30% cheese. Be like, wow, this is all just dairy proteins. But I switched over and I have a couple of alternative butters and alternative milks at my house now. The beauty of which is that they're shelf stable if you don't like open them. Like I've got a hoard of almond milk and oat milk in my basement.
Yeah. Yeah. They
just
are
sitting on a shelf, ready for when I need it. Doesn't have to take up space in my fridge. Love that. But I also have a couple of different types of butters, and one of them is really amazing. So I have melt butter, which is a plant-based butter. So it's just fats from plants that are turned into a butter, and it's delicious. Like, I'm not saying like it's a pretty good imitation of dairy milk, so it tastes pretty good. No, it's like objectively delicious on its own. Right. I think a lot of people who use like alternatives to mainstreamed products also assume that they're kind of like a semi-suitable replacement or like a cheap impression of, and I'm like, nah, it's just made from different things and it's great. So the melt butter, I highly recommend. I love it because it comes in sticks, so if you have like a recipe that calls for specific amounts, you can just chop a chunk off.
However,
the spreadability isn't quite as good. And I, for spreadable butter, I have tubs of stuff called Miyoko's, and Miyoko's is kind of like how do you describe it? Like the Cadillac of alternative milk butters. This Japanese woman, Miyoko, has her own YouTube channel where she teaches you how to make all this shit from scratch, which is fucking cool. But her oat milk butter is like delicious, and it's fermented, so it has the tang to it that cultured butter has. And like it's super divine and like very spreadable when you scrape it out of the tub.
Yeah.
And I use it for like buttering bread and things like that. And I really like it. And Miyoko has all these like alternatives. She does cashew butter. She does all kinds of shit. Like her channel is full of fancy ways to make stuff out of plants that are delicious. And I really enjoy the alternative butters. But of course, you know, that makes me butter woke, I'm sure.
It does make you butter woke. Yeah.
because all butters are suitable butters, right?
Yes. How woke is that? You're too inclusive of your butters. What the fuck?
I'm so inclusive.
Yeah.
But yeah, the Miyoko's is great. I have this wild hair up my ass to quit my job and then just like learn how to make a bunch of nut butters.
Let's start a nut butter company.
Milks.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Butt milks. What'd you say? Nut milks.
Butt milks and nut milks. Butt nuts. I also found out something really interesting. So I got a bag that you make nut milks out of. Like you put the nuts in and then you like mash them up and you strain it, and the mesh is like super fine, like it's a couple of microns or something like that. And so it's like,
so it's like cheesecloth but like more uniform and it's
even more. So I found too that you can make alternative milk butters and standard dairy butters infused with cannabis really, really nice in those nut milk bags.
Oh,
because when you strain the butter through them, all of the chemicals that you want from the plant material come through in the butter because they're fat soluble, and that comes out. But none of the plant material gets in your finished butter, and the texture is way better. So if anybody out there is like a weed enthusiast who likes to make edibles or whatever your shtick is, get a nut milk bag and use that as your strainer. What I did was I took the
butter. As two straight edge assholes, we cannot advise. Right. We can only advise against that.
The only way you would ever want to do this is if you're a terrific criminal and
a terrific criminal,
unrepentant and irredeemable criminal. Even if it's been legalized, which it has in both of our states, where we are right now.
Right. Right.
I feel like this is the key to making really good weed butter or canna butter. The fancy legitimized language around making like weed brownies or whatever. It's canna butter. That's how you know it's okay.
That's how you know it's okay.
That's how you know it's okay. It's socially acceptable.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, that's the deal. You got to get the really fine mesh. And so what I did is I put all of the plant cuttings into the bag. And then I got crock pot. Not an instant pot. Crock pot. Slow cooker.
Yeah.
Set that up on my counter for 3 days. And I put the butter into the crock pot. And then I put the bag of plant material into the melted butter. And I would bring it up to temperature. And then as soon as it got hot, right before, you don't want to boil it because that'll be too hot and it'll burn the plant material. And then it tastes like burnt popcorn. And you have all this finished butter that tastes fucking terrible. Mm-hmm. So don't do that. Don't ever let it boil. But you bring it up to like low temperature and then you turn it off and let it cool itself down. And then you bring it up to temperature and you cool it off. And you bring it up and you cool it off.
Right.
And in doing that cycle, if you do it over the course of like 3 days, you get a very strong product.
Mm-hmm.
Like real strong, but not strong flavor.
Right, right. I see. Sure. Like you just get all of the cannabinoids
chemical
and the
content.
Yeah, I see. But without like all of the plant material, as you were saying.
Right. Which or of course I would never do like because I am straight edge.
Yes. Right. 100%.
Yeah. 100%. But yeah, those nut milk bags are, I've never used it to make nut milk, but I could. But I don't. But I will.
But I
when I quit my job.
Right.
Maybe I should start a rival company to Miyoko's and be like, my nut milks bring all the straight edge kids to the yard. To the yard. butter woke. Try alternative butters. Like, they're really, really fucking good. And I also found out that, like, even though I was raised on cheeses because I'm from Minnesota and the rest of my family going back to my ancestors is from heavily cheese influenced countries in Europe.
Yep.
I don't think it's particularly good for me. And I will say this. I think that the milks are especially bad for me, dairy milks, but cheeses seem to be better. Like I can eat cheese and it doesn't cause a digestive and More importantly, skin disaster. So this is the thing that started happening. I noticed like my skin was breaking out, and you're supposed to outgrow that, but I actually think that's a myth too. Like, I think you either have good skin or you don't, and like no matter how old you get, it doesn't really matter. But I have very temperamental skin, and I think part of this is because when I was a kid, my parents had me on fucking antibiotics all the time, and I think it like really messed up my like biome.
Yeah,
and as a result of that, like the biome on my skin has always been really weird because of all the antibiotics, and like probably a bunch of weird resistant shit grows on me. And so my skin will just randomly break out like crazy. And I have found that if I lay off of sugar and liquid dairy,
yeah,
it is much easier to deal with. Oh. Like almost not a problem at all. And if I limit how much cheese I eat, which is like cheese is partially fermented, you know what I mean? That's like you use bacteria to go from liquid milk to cheese. I think that process makes it easier on my body and makes me less prone to breaking out. I won't get a rash and stuff on my skin. Mm-hmm. But with the plant butters, I never have this problem ever. I could just eat a stick of plant butter, which I'm not going to do.
Sure.
But I could, and it would not make my skin break out. If I did that with dairy butter, I would be in trouble. Yeah. And I think, like, we found out that my nephew has celiac, and sometimes I wonder if a bunch of these problems that I have are also problems that other people in my family have, but they're not as, like, in tune to the cycle of, like, well, if I eat certain cheeses or if I eat milk, like the soft rind cheeses like brie, that's a danger zone. It's almost liquid milk.
Yeah. Yep.
So the harder the cheese is, the more easy it is for my body to deal with it and not react to it. But which is sad because I really like the liquid cheeses.
Yeah. No, I know.
So they're... I sometimes have to like make the decision. Do
you're like, this is,
is it worth it?
Yeah. Am I gonna borrow from tomorrow so I can enjoy today?
Yes.
Yeah.
Which kind of is like the whole story of America, really.
Yeah.
Nothing's more American than that.
Right. Yeah.
Right.
Yep.
Yeah. So cheese is almighty. I also like the non-dairy cheeses.
Uh-huh.
They don't satisfy me in the way that a regular dairy cheese will.
Right.
Like I can reach a point of saturation with dairy cheese where I'm like, oh, okay, that's enough.
Yeah. Yeah.
I think half of a wheel of brie. I should stop now.
The last time I tried like a lot of the alternative dairy products in earnest, like the cheeses and things like that, I think I was like in college in like 2013, maybe.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like I was still vegetarian. So that was like higher on the list of things that I was like more focused on finding out about. And even then there were some good ones, but I know now like they really like upped their game. Right. And also like a lot of them, like you said, like a lot of them actually they've moved away from trying to be this fucking like perfect replica. Mm-hmm. And now it's like, they actually taste good because there's not someone trying to figure out how to like nail what is actually kind of a disgusting flavor if you didn't grow up with it.
100%.
Like, it's, you know, there are plenty of people who, if they've never had dairy milk before, they're just like, why would you? It's kind of gross.
Why would you drink this? Yeah. It's kind of funny. I had a matcha latte recently.
Yeah.
And I specified oat milk, but I had to let go of control because it was part of a group order.
Oh, yeah.
And I suspect that the person who placed the group order on behalf of all of us said oat milk.
Yeah.
But I think probably it got overwhelmed by the fact that there were like 10 coffee drinks in the order, and they were like, and just reverted back to like what they usually do. And I had the milk in the coffee.
Yeah.
And then I got, or in the matcha, and I got home a couple of hours later and I had like pizza face.
Oh, like, no.
Massive breakout. And just I was like, that was milk.
Right.
That was for sure milk. I mean, it's that instantaneous now. The longer I lay off dairy, the quicker my body responds to it if I happen to get some by accident.
Oh,
I mean,
wow.
It's like one for one. There's like no like, ooh, I wonder if I ate dairy a couple of days ago. It's like, oh, 45 minutes ago, I had some real cheese and now my face is breaking out. Right. It's like so immediate now. It's like, oh, there's definitely no question that this is what the deal is. But now I think about this and I'm like, man, I could have had like way nicer skin my whole life if I had just not been
right?
Indulging in like milk. Right. Where, when you were a kid, were they trying to ram milk down everybody's throat in your culture too? Like they had the whole Got Milk campaign, which everybody our age probably remembers from television. But like in Minnesota, it's inescapable. Like you sit down at a restaurant and they're like, does your kid want milk to drink?
Right.
You know, like, right. Ugh. Is it like that in California as well?
It was.
Or was it?
Yeah, no, like it our was. Schools were, you know, like all the school lunches, basically your choice was like milk or sugar encoded or sugar filled flavored milk. Like those were your drink choices.
Yeah.
So you could like get milk, chocolate milk, strawberry milk probably is were the choices. And then, mm-hmm. It was, I wasn't allowed to watch a lot of TV, growing up. And so I didn't, I think I missed a little bit of the like heavier, cause like, I can imagine if you're watching TV and you're kind of just like fully enmeshed in like the culture of the time, then mm-hmm. you're going to get a bigger dose of it than like I had kind of, you know, I mean, I also had absent parents like the rest of us of that generation. Right. So it's not, you know, no surprise there, but I also wasn't allowed to watch TV. So it was kind of, like the few times that I did watch TV, I wasn't like I was super aware of the Got Milk campaign mm-hmm. shit. Like that was just fucking happening. You know, and then also there was like the beef, like where's the beef shit.
Yes.
So yeah, and beef, you know,
it's
I mean
what's for dinner.
Yeah, beef. It's what's for dinner. Yeah, I don't think I'm trying to think if I had like any kind of like specific, I mean, for sure it was like, you know, you needed to drink, like I'm drinking milk. And in a few years, like those commercials, like they used to play those, I think during, where's it? Like, I feel like they used to play that a lot during like kids' cartoons and stuff.
Yes. Like there was a kid who was like, you got to drink your milk. Somebody's like, you got to drink your milk. And then the kid stands in front of a mirror and it's like their grown up self. Their
yes.
Like old teenage
yes.
self is like, this is what you'll look like if you drink milk.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah, no, it's fucking crazy. Yeah.
And if you don't drink milk, you won't be a prom queen. You'll be a shriveled old hag by the age of 22 with osteoporosis and fractures in your spine.
Exactly. Yeah.
Oh my God. Like, it's kind of interesting, too. I was reading some studies about, you know, the whole driving force behind milk is like people get osteoporosis. There's a lot of calcium in milk. If you mm-hmm. drink milk, it'll turn into calcium in your bones. Right.
Right.
But there was a lot of like contradictory information about that scientifically. Here's how a pseudoscientist tells you how to live.
Right.
I can't verify any of this, but because of the nature of the alkaline quality of milk, when you drink it, your body has to become more acidic to balance it out. And that environment is not conducive to you storing that calcium in your bones, because in order for your body mm-hmm. to like level out the acidity that it takes to counterbalance the milk itself, your body, your blood becomes acidic. And in order for your body to deacidify your blood, it leaches calcium from your bones.
Right. Right.
So it's this weird like calcium circle jerk mm-hmm. where like you drink a bunch of calcium, which is basic, and so your body acidifies to deal with the like base of the milk, and then in order to balance out the acidification in your bloodstream, your body leaches calcium from your bones to bring the like
how does that happen? Because it's got to pass through your stomach, which is just incredibly acidic.
Yeah, I don't know. This is what I'm saying. Like, I was reading this and I was like, I don't actually understand how.
I mean, I don't disagree that there's some issues with milk, but I don't know. I've got some suspicions that may not be totally true, because the blood, mm-hmm. like being able to eating something that affects the pH balance of your blood can't be true.
Like, let's Google it. I'm curious.
Like, that can't be true. Like, how does the body like, first of all, like, okay, I could see if you were eating a substance that, say, absorbs directly through your skin and crosses, like, a lot of the cellular barriers and goes directly into your bloodstream before it gets anywhere near your stomach.
Yeah.
Fine. Now we can talk about, like localized chemistry changes. And yes, it's true right. that your body, like, homeostasis means that, like, the way the mineralization of your bones works is, like, through blood chemistry as well. Like, there's that, but I don't know how you're going to get, by the time anything from milk, like, you're not going to get milk proteins floating around in your bloodstream.
Right.
You're going to get, like, they have to go through it. Like, I mean, you could inject it, obviously, but that's not what we're talking about. If you're doing that, fine, whatever, then come argue about it. But that's not what we're talking about in this situation.
Where's the deal here?
Because this sounds suspiciously like the, what's the, you know, two pseudoscientists tell you how to live. This sounds suspiciously like that, that, like, the whole thing about the fucking, like, acid.
So here's,
go ahead. Yeah.
Yeah. So NIH, National Library of Medicine, National Institutes of Health, has an article titled "The Skeletal Safety of Milk-Derived Proteins: A Meta-Analysis of Randomized Control Trials."
Yeah,
there's been purpose in the abstract. There's been a persistent claim that dairy products contain calcium leaching proteins, although the soundness of such a claim has been challenged.
Yep.
A meta-analysis of randomized control studies on controlled trials mm-hmm. on the effects of milk-derived protein supplementation on bone health indices in adults was performed to reconcile the controversy surrounding the potential skeletal safety concerns of proteins of dairy origin.
Mm-hmm.
Results. Milk-derived protein supplementation did not significantly affect whole body BMD. What is BMD? Bone mass density.
Okay.
At the lumbar spine, hip, femoral neck, trochanter, intertrochanter, and ultradistal radius. The concentrations of bone formation markers, osteocalcin, procollagen type 1, amino terminal propeptide, mm-hmm. bone resorption markers, deoxypyridinoline, parathyroid hormone, were not significantly affected. However, increased insulin-like growth factor, which is IGF-1 concentrations were observed, and reduced IGF-1 concentrations were observed when soy protein was used as a comparator, and increased IGF-1 concentrations were observed when carbohydrate was used. Our findings do not support the claim that proteins of dairy origin are detrimental to bone health.
Yeah, like, I don't disagree that there's probably some, like, better understanding that could be had in terms of, like, does the calcium in milk actually, like, I think there's plenty of studies that suggest that the calcium, the fortified, like, orange juices and things are actually mm-hmm. like better. Although,
or like leafy greens are like, heard that leafy greens are a much more bioavailable form of calcium than what's in dairy. And so like, if you really care about osteoporosis, you should eat a lot of green shit and not drink milk.
Right. Right.
Not because drinking milk is counterproductive, but because there's way better options for bone density.
But the idea that, like, proteins, like, you could, like, what I understand about the metabolic pathways in terms mm-hmm. of digestion is it's like it's passing through, like, a highly acidic environment. Those proteins aren't getting into your body until they're denatured and broken down.
Yeah.
Like, they're not getting in. That's how you, like, if they are.
You're not getting in.
If they are, you in particular have maybe some kind of, like, disease or some issue that needs to be addressed because that's not normally how it works. Like, it's. So I don't know. This is the world we live in. That's very frustrating, right? Is it's like, you can't, I'm sure there's a bunch of shit I say that I was like, well, that turned out to just be total crock of shit.
One day at work, this is like in the same vein. One day at work, I was in the, like, lunchroom, and it was in the morning. It was before 11 a.m., which is critical in just a moment. And I had, like, some to-go container, something I brought from home that had, like, chopped up fruit in it. And one of my coworkers at the time was like, oh, are you eating fruit? And I was like, yeah. She's like, you're not supposed to eat fruit before noon. And I was like, what do you mean? And I was like, I was like, why not? She's like, oh, it's like super bad for you. You didn't know this? Like, that's what they say. I was like, who's they? And she was like, I don't know. And I was like, what are you talking about? So this, like, woman was like running through her daily life, like, hard line avoiding fruit before noon every day. as a component of a meal because she couldn't even say what she thought would happen if you broke the rule.
Oh, God.
And I was like, where did you... I'm actually curious where you heard this. She's like, I don't know.
Yeah.
I was like, what? Like, you just said nothing to me.
Right.
You might as well have been like, stuff and things. And I'd be like,
God.
Like, you didn't tell me anything. Oh, my God. Pseudoscience, right? Don't eat fruit before noon, Ned.
Don't you do it.
It's going to leach the calcium out of your bones. You're going to be a frail old fuck.
What was the... there was like the alkaline diet.
Yes. And this was also something that somebody else contested to me because they're like, listen, if it was so easy to affect your body's pH balance that eating a particular food would throw it off, nobody would survive because the range of acceptable pH in your body is so narrow and your body's so good at maintaining it that like we'd all be dead if it was possible to like eat a carrot and raise your acid level or whatever the fuck, right?
Yeah. Yeah, it's in a lot of those diets, they end up feeling like oftentimes they're just such a radical shift from what you normally eat that they do feel good and they do impact your health. And suddenly you're like, you know, either you're forced to eat a bunch of greens and shit that you normally don't. And the fact that it's like also don't mix your milk with whatever. And you're like. Like that part's nonsense. I mean, I don't know about the mixing your milk, but my point is like they'll prescribe things like, oh, you only eat this thing. And it's like, all of those things are good to eat.
Right.
So good job.
Great job.
Yeah.
Oh man. Speaking of, fruits, like what is rhubarb? Is rhubarb's not a fruit.
It's a stem.
It's a green of some kind, right?
Yeah.
Is it considered a green?
Well, it's a plant, and the part, the edible part is the, like the stalk.
Right. I mean, I grow some in my yard and I make stuff out of it. But I just am like, how is it classified? Like, it's kind of like chard.
It's a vegetable.
Like Swiss chard.
Yeah. Like it's,
It's a vegetable? It's a vegetable.
Yeah. It's a vegetable.
Yeah.
And then,
I made, so this is how the fucking internet works now. Are you ready?
Yes.
So I was like, okay, I want to make a shrub or a shrob.
A shrub,
As we affectionately refer to them, which is basically like a fruit and vinegar drink or syrup that you mix into something else. So like you put it in fizzy water and it's kind of like a natural pop or whatever you want to make.
Yeah.
And it's really refreshing in the summer because it's sweet and acidic. And so it's like, you know, you get like the tannins or whatever and it dries your mouth out. So I was like, okay, I just need to know like what the ratios are of the vinegar because you add apple cider vinegar or you can ferment them. I took the cheap way out and made the apple cider vinegar version.
Right.
So you basically like take a bunch of strawberries and a bunch of rhubarb and you chop it up and you put it in a pot on the stove with some sugar. And then you mix it all together and you boil it down and it breaks down and all the beautiful color comes out. And then you strain off all of the mush or you can puree it, which I also did. Turn that into a separate syrup that's much thicker. And then you add sugar to it and apple cider vinegar to get the acidity. And it's great. And it's delicious. And I was like, what's the ratio? I got to look this up. Now, every time I open the fucking internet, it's like apple cider vinegar for dieting. And I'm just like, fuck you. Oh my God. So now my feed or whatever, my Google shit is just full of like this like evangelism around like using apple cider vinegar to get thin. I was like,
right?
Fucking A. Like, why am I not being bombarded with stories about rhubarb instead?
Right. Sorry.
My mom and all of her nurse friends, like these people are nurses, right? Just let this sink in for a second.
Okay.
The people that you go to.
Yep.
For help with your health when it is compromised and you are in a vulnerable state are standing behind the nurse's station at your clinic or hospital chugging apple cider vinegar to lose weight and skipping meals. And I'm like, I think probably the fact that you're not eating is why you're losing weight and less so the fact that you're chugging apple cider vinegar. Also, this is unhealthy. Like, this is weird. I just remember that. Nurses, right? Nurses. Right. What are you doing? You're supposed to be the ones who know stuff about health. Why are you right. chugging apple cider vinegar as a form of weight loss?
Sorry, I just got a message from work. Fuck,
you're fine.
Yeah. Fuck those guys.
We're talking about shit we don't know anything about. Can't they know? Yes. This is important. We're solving some real problems here.
People get really strong opinions about shit. It's not the strong opinions. They hold on to them so strongly.
Right. The death grip.
The death grip of it. Like it's, mm-hmm. I do find, or I wonder if there's some way that we could promote a, how do I put this? Like a culture of like separating our ideas from like who we are and our character a little bit. Like allowing there to be discourse where it's like criticism of an idea is not a reflection on you. Like, yeah. You know what I mean? Like somehow to allow us all to like feel a little more secure in our like emotions and like how we feel in our interactions and not feel like, man, I lost today because my idea wasn't chosen or my idea didn't win out or now I'm mm-hmm. angry because this guy disagreed with me about like, you know, the best flavor of like ice cream or something, like whatever the fuck yeah. it is. Like it's sort of like the thing with the health shit and like
is
all
it
the
non-dairy ice cream.
Yeah. Well, is it woke? Is it woke ice cream?
Is it woke ice cream? Yeah.
Do you have a woke approach to ice cream? Are you too inclusive of all your flavors? Like you need to be, you need to pick one and then hate on the rest of them like a normal person.
Right. It's got to be vanilla or nothing.
Yeah. And fuck chocolate and strawberry and all those right. other flavors that right. are not good.
Oh my God. I don't know if I ever told you this before. Yeah. I don't think I've ever mentioned it on the podcast. When we were little kids, my friend Aaron Olson's dad kept yes. his like Playboy magazines in the basement.
Jesus.
And she like found the stash. She's like, I got to show you this. When we were like six
we
years
may,
old.
We
right?
may have to bleep that a little bit. I don't know. Anyway, it's fine. Whatever.
So
we will or we won't.
I was introduced to Playboy at a yeah. very young age. Uh-huh. And there was like this section, you know how they have like the featured sections in Playboy magazine?
Yes.
I read it for the articles for and the article. Political yeah. discourse.
Uh-huh.
And not the giant tits. So there was this one like section that featured women with red hair, like redheads.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I will never forget this because when you're a little kid, you're like a sponge. You're like, okay, I'm going to take this all in. So like one of the things that this like photo section of mm-hmm. naked women who had red hair talked about, it's like they had these like probably completely fictitious blurbs of things that these like model women say, right?
Oh,
like,
sure.
Oh, yep. here's my bio, right?
Yeah, the whole like, you know, what I think about like my favorite ice cream or like where I walk on the,
yes,
you know.
Yes, spot on, right?
Yep.
This redhead, this woman allegedly said, quotation, like, a redhead's favorite flavor of ice cream is strawberry. Not my, any redhead's favorite flavor of ice cream is strawberry, right? Mm-hmm. And I remember thinking as a kid, like, this is good information to have.
It's funny you say that because the one redhead that I know very well, I mean, it's been a long time, but like, I mean, we're friends now, but the nature of her favorite ice cream hasn't come up in a long time, but I do remember as when we were in high school that she really liked strawberries.
Oh my God. It's one of the great truths of the yes. universe.
Yeah.
Playboy, that Playboy doesn't lie.
Right. Yeah.
I just remember thinking I got to keep this information in my back pocket. Like mm-hmm. this is good to have.
Right.
I don't know why I thought that at the age of six, like,
Well, I mean, like when you're six and you realize you're like, I could run into one of these people at any minute.
Any minute.
Any minute now, it's gonna be important.
Already.
Yeah.
We're
and like, it's not even like a sexual fantasy. It's just you're just like, right. you're like, I'm gonna run into a redhead at the supermarket and I'm gonna know that they like, and I'm gonna be like, you like strawberry ice cream. And they're gonna be like, yes. And then you're gonna be rewarded for it.
I also remember thinking like, but I love strawberry ice cream too. And I do to this day. It's one of my favorite flavors. Actually, I think my favorite flavor of ice cream in all seriousness is Neapolitan. Because it's got all of them there.
I don't disagree. Yeah. It's the trifecta of perfection.
Yes. And I remember thinking, like, is it okay? How is it that I like strawberry ice cream this much and I don't have red hair? And I thought maybe I'm secretly a redhead.
Well, let me ask you a few questions here.
Okay.
So when you say strawberry ice cream, do you like it to be completely smooth or chunks of strawberry in it?
Oh, I prefer the chunks of strawberry, although Neapolitan ice cream never has the chunks of strawberry in it.
Right.
And I still think that's perfectly acceptable.
Sure. So then the next question I have is, where is the Neapolitan ice cream that's made with like more modern sensibility of ice cream flavors? Like, I'm not knocking, like, I love a good box of Kraft macaroni and cheese. I'm not arguing that that's high quality, good macaroni and cheese. It's just a very specific flavor, which is also the same for like Neapolitan ice cream as you get in those bricks, right? Like, you can open it up and there's like the three slots of it. So then the question I have is, where are the Neapolitan ice cream blends that are like the high quality chocolate, the high quality, like vanilla bean or like a, you know, and then a, like a high quality strawberry or bespoke or whatever. I don't, you know, quality is immaterial here, but get my point.
I totally get you.
Yeah. Yeah.
I don't know. I feel like that we're really missing an opportunity there.
Right.
Like, I oftentimes have thought to myself, what's missing from my life in terms of kitchen gadgetry is the fucking ice cream machine.
Yeah.
Because I would be making what you're talking about for myself. I'd be like, oh, this is like chocolate I got from Dandelion Chocolate, right? It's like, and these are Madagascan vanilla pods that I actually like ordered off the internet and I'm going to make them here. And then I grew these strawberries myself in my yard. Like, I would be that person. I would be making it like really crazy.
Maybe the next time we get together, we should make ice cream. Cause I was thinking about, there are a lot of ways to make it that don't necessarily necessitate the ownership of a traditional ice cream maker. You can also, I know you can make it, you can make like really fast ice cream with small crystals, I think, with liquid nitrogen.
Yep.
Which could be a fun thing, although I don't know. I think I know in my area where I could source some, but I'm not sure. I can't remember how regulated it is
here.
Yeah. I mean, it exists and you can get it. It's just the cost is oftentimes, if you don't have the equipment to handle it, then you end up like renting that equipment, I guess, or needing to acquire it. Because you need like a decent doer to contain it in, although maybe that comes with when you purchase it and it's like, you know, old timey milk bottles, right? Like, you return it. I don't know, I'm speculating. Because like when I worked in a lab, it's just like I think that was the one of the resources that I didn't normally manage, so I didn't really know that much about the procedure of like how we acquired it. Like in our case, it's like I knew I went down to like the general lab supply and like got a new doer or filled up the doer we had or whatever, but I didn't know how we got the, because like on campus they just had a big tank of it. Anyway, ice cream.
Here's another thing I got. We might have talked about this on the podcast. I can't remember. I have like, I've sort of filled out my kitchen gadgetry.
Yeah.
Like, I bought a KitchenAid mixer and I got it refurbished, and I also bought it during a sale. So I got it for like $200.
Wow.
Like the $500 model.
Mm-hmm.
And as a little kid, my grandma always used to make everything in the KitchenAid mixer at her house. And I remember thinking, because she's my sophisticated relative, right?
Oh, yeah. Yep.
Totally out of place in the rest of the family.
Obvs.
I remember thinking, as a kid, probably around the same time that I was like, a redhead's favorite ice cream is strawberry. We gotta remember this. It's gonna come in handy someday. It's gonna get me out of a tight spot someday.
Uh-huh.
I also remember thinking roughly at the same point in my life, like, the way that you know that you have achieved successful adulthood is when you have one of those KitchenAid mixers. Took me till the age of 45.
Uh-huh. But you did it.
But I did it. I got one. It's in my basement. I don't remember which color I ordered. I wanted the pistachio colored one, but they were sold out. I think I got the red one instead. Or maybe it's all black. It's either red, black, or pistachio, and it wasn't pistachio, so it's got to be red or black.
Mm-hmm.
And I also bought a canner, like a pressure canner.
Mm-hmm.
The metal on metal kind.
Right.
Check this out, right? Yep. Not that I am a prepper. because we were just talking about this before we hit record. I am not a prepper. I don't think that my capacity to assess the wide range of scenarios that could possibly unfold and prioritize them in terms of likelihood and then prepare for those priorities, I don't think I have that.
Yeah.
I don't think anybody does. And so like, I thought in the situation, in the unlikely outcome where I am needing to can food to have it later out of necessity, I don't want a pressure canner or a pressure cooker of any kind that requires ongoing calibration.
Right.
Because who's going to fucking calibrate it if you're in that scenario?
Right.
So I got the kind that's a metal on metal seal and then also uses weights to control the pressure inside rather than... you know, a dial that you dial in and then set it yourself or whatever.
Right.
And I also thought, like, when I was doing research into all of the pressure canners, like, most of them have some kind of a rubber or silicone gasket that keeps the lid tight.
Yes.
And those gaskets can wear out in ways that are not visible. And so you're leaking pressure, even though you can't tell that just by looking at it or measuring it. And then you don't get the chamber up to pressure, and then you run the risk of bottling of a bunch of botulism, and then the next time you eat it, you die. And I, like, our neighbors had a pressure canner that they let us borrow, and Damon asked them, hey, when was the last time that you had the gauge calibrated? And they're like, what do you mean? And we were like, oh no!
Right.
You're supposed to do that every single year. Like, take it to a university extension service and be like, is this dial accurate?
Uh-huh.
Is this thing really coming up to pressure the way it's supposed to? So, same story, right? I had to wait several years before buying the canner because they're like $550 fucking dollars to start. Like, that's the lowest price on the smallest canner. And I was like, that's a lot of fucking money for something I'm not going to use every day. And so I waited and waited. And then I found one on eBay for $200.
Oh, fantastic.
Yes. So I got my KitchenAid mixer and my super fancy pressure canner for less than the cost of either of them brand new. Combined, less than the cost of either of them brand new. I'm now a real adult.
Good job. You nailed it.
Show's over, folks.
Show's over.
I've arrived. Nothing to see here.
Got my KitchenAid.
Got
my
it all figured
canner.
Out. Yep. Yeah. My extra credit will be figuring out how to make ice cream without an ice cream maker.
Right. Right. Yeah.
Do you, okay, do you have a preference? Ice cream, gelato.
I think I have a problem with your premise, which is that that yes, there is a big difference in texture and flavor when done right and correct. Mm-hmm. And yeah. So in that context, I have strong appreciation for both.
Okay.
I find gelato... So the thing I like about a good ice cream that's like pretty purely just like sort of like cream and sweetener and frozen, right? Like, or flavorant and sweetener and frozen. I do enjoy that. But the gelato, the kind of like the pudding like consistency of gelato, yes. I guess, is, is a different experience for me. I find it tastes richer. And so I find gelato to feel like a more rich, like heavier experience than ice cream.
Which is super interesting to me because like when you make ice cream, you make it with heavy cream.
Yep.
And when you make gelato, you make it with milk.
Right.
And then the ice cream has 10 to 25% fat and the gelato has like under 10% fat.
Right.
Ice cream is made with eggs. Gelato has no eggs.
Right.
Ice cream is fluffy. Gelato is dense and silky. It's like, you would think, like intuitively, I would think it would be the other way around.
Right.
You know what I mean? Because of the end result, the texture and the mouthfeel on your tongue is like, oh, this gelato is way richer. And it turns out it's like not.
Oh, it's just the density of it. It's denser.
Yeah. Yeah. Right. Which is cool. I mean.
And it's usually served at a warmer, like almost a soft serve. Almost. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. I had gelato for the first time in Europe, right on the edge of France and Monaco on the Mediterranean.
Yeah.
And I was like, Jesus Christ, how come nobody's ever fucking told me about gelato?
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. And then I got back to America and it like exploded. Everywhere is Dutch gelato now.
Yep. Yep.
I was just like a little ahead of the curve. I would like to credit myself with bringing gelato stateside.
Obviously.
But I did not do that.
Are you sure?
But obviously I did. I did. It was me. You can thank me for all that gelato.
You're welcome. I mean, thank you.
you're welcome. Yeah, you're welcome. No big deal.
No big deal.
You know.
Oh my God, that's so cool. Great. So
yep.
Are we, should we get down to the brass tacks of the point of this podcast, which is not Woke Butter? That's a different podcast. Although I guess maybe now this one is the episode that's Woke Butter.
Right.
But originally we were going to discuss the, like the new segment of like two assholes tell you how to live.
Tell you how to live.
But like more specifically, we were going to do, so we have two potential topics, which was the, two pseudoscientists or two straight edges. What's some other insufferable personality type archetypes or like recent
mom influencers?
Oh yeah, so like two insufferable parent influencers tell you how to live.
Yeah, especially relevant because neither of us have children by choice.
Yeah, yeah.
So here's how you should. Here's how you should be raising your children. Don't.
Yeah, don't do it.
If you want your kids to turn out like us, don't pay any attention to them at all.
Have you seen that trend of like non-parenting parenting?
Is this like an official thing?
No education. Let's see. No education parenting trend. I think that's it. Unschooling.
Tell me about this. This is news to me.
So unschooling is the parenting trend that basically is no math, no social studies. Kids get the kids set the curriculum, and it's pretty insane. So it's like, it's basically the idea is like these influencers are basically making the argument that children know how to self-educate. And so it's just your job to like facilitate that by providing
just
whatever
get
they
out
want.
Of their way and
yeah,
let them do it.
Yeah.
Okay.
And so, and like, it's kind of crazy,
not that they're correct about this, but is this claim that they're making that children know how to self-educate allegedly grounded in something else, or is it just somebody just said this one day?
All right, let's see. So here's the Wikipedia article under unschooling as of Wednesday, July 9th, 2025. It's unschooling is a practice of self-driven informal learning characterized by a lesson-free and curriculum-free implementation of homeschooling. Unschooling encourages exploration of activities initiated by the children themselves under the belief that the more personal learning is, the more meaningful, well understood, and therefore useful it is to the child. So one could like understand the sentiment there, right?
Yes.
Like the idea that like if there's some, you know, curiosity and it is rewarded with access to that information, that learning lesson may go more smoothly or form like some core connections for this child, right? Fine.
Sure.
So the term unschooling was coined in the 1970s by educator John Holt. And let's
started in the 70s?
Yeah.
Oh my God. Basically everything that came out of that decade was a crock of shit.
Yeah. So John Holt died in 1985, so he doesn't have to live with any of his nonsense. That's just what I'm going
to
leave
you
that
there.
You
don't have to bear out the consequences of your stupid thing because you're already dead, so who cares?
He's widely regarded as the father of unschooling. Unschooling is often seen as a subset of homeschooling, the key difference lying in the use of an external or individual curriculum. Homeschooling, in its many variations, has been the subject of widespread public debate. Okay. Mm-hmm. Critics of unschooling see it as extreme and express concerns that unschooled children will be neglected by parents who may not be capable of sustaining a proper educational environment, and the child may lack the social skills, structure, discipline, and motivation of their schooled peers. Critics also worry that unschooled children will be unable to cope with uncomfortable or challenging situations. Proponents of unschooling disagree, asserting that self-directed education is a non-academic, often natural and diversified environment, is far more efficient, sustainable, and child-friendly form of education than traditional schooling. As it preserves innate curiosity, pleasure, and willingness to discover and learn new things. However, some studies suggest that children who have participated in unschooling may experience academic underdevelopment. No shit.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, right? That seems self-evident.
Yeah, I'm not going to get into the history of it too much. Let me just see if there's any like specifically relevant shit.
I mean, while you're using that, I'm thinking out loud here. I do not support the claim that there is one right way to educate people.
Agreed.
And subsequently that right way is the way that the American public school system or private school system does it, right? Like,
right.
Usually in order to do something at scale, you kind of have to have a plan and a process built out ahead of time. So it's like I learned algebra in eighth grade, I think, and geometry in seventh. And then I did trig in ninth. And like, I don't know, I ended up in pre-calc and college statistics. And that's because I didn't do calculus because at the time I didn't get it. And mm-hmm. I had to take a bunch of drugs before my brain opened up enough for me to be like, oh, that's what calculus is for. I also don't support the opposite claim that like that is not a good way to teach people, mm-hmm. and that you should not teach them at all anything ahead of time, planned out ahead of time, and just let it see where it wanders off to. Mm-hmm. Right? Like somewhere between, if those things were artificially placed on a spectrum, one of them at each end, I would mm-hmm. say probably somewhere in the middle is where you want to end up on that. Like I reject the notion that a lot of kids espouse, which is that like, I'm never going to use this, so I don't know why I have to learn this, right?
Right.
Because like, the more you know, the more connections you can make. And it's right. the relationships between things that to me are more important than the things in and of themselves, right?
Yeah.
And having those basic like touch points and tools at your disposal, yes. Make it at your disposable.
Yeah.
Make it easier to make those connections and establish those relationships and then
right.
benefit from those observations and knowledge base. So like, I think however it is that a person can take in the information and internalize it and then synthesize something from it is the way that you should tailor your education to them.
Mm-hmm.
But when we're talking about how many fucking kids are in school in America right now, like 100 million.
I don't know.
That's so many fucking people. Like you can't, there's no way to be like, well, let's see how you learn individually. Like kids that are on an IEP or individual education plan or whatever it's called.
73.6 million under the age of 18.
Okay.
To be specific.
So I was
so you were
close.
Really wrong, but no, I'm sure you were very
you're
those
really even, wrong or also not that wrong at all.
A fantastic off the cuff estimate for sure. Yeah.
Yeah, right? So yeah. Like how would you tailor an education, an individual education to every single one of those 75 million kids? Like you right. just can't do it. And so like, I think it makes sense to have some kind of a superstructure where you're like, well, roughly the other kids your age can do most of this stuff. And so yeah. that's where we should all kind of collectively be at in order to move forward as a group or whatever.
There's one criticism of homeschooling that, I think, like the good homeschooling parents know about and understand yeah. and appreciate, which is that there's value in being part of your social cohort.
Yes.
And so a lot of the parents that I know who have dabbled in homeschooling, I mean, most of them now, because there was homeschooling during COVID, right? And yep. so most of them, their biggest concern was that their children were missing out in the social aspect, right?
Mm-hmm.
And,
to negotiate conflict.
Yeah, exactly. How to like exist in a structured social environment where it's not maybe what you want. It's not your parents. It's not like yeah. it's not your home. It's not where you have the most amount of freedoms. You have to negotiate and figure out how to be comfortable and exist in this like group environment where by necessity your personal freedoms are reduced because you can, you know, your freedom to punch other people in the face neglects their freedom to not be punched in the face.
Right. This is like a concept in ethics of like positive and negative rights. Exactly. Your right to do something and my right not to be done to like to refrain from. Yeah.
Yeah. And when you're home alone, you can punch everybody in the face because there's no one else to have, you know, or you can negotiate those freedoms however you want. But my point being is like that understanding and recognition of like entering into public spaces and how we can best thrive there as a group.
Yeah.
And being part of that and recognizing the value of that and seeing how that can work. And, you know, and I also get that there's like really great criticisms of like, especially the US school system, right? Like you know, it's very strange in many ways and it's really hard for a lot of kids. Like I failed. It didn't work for me. I couldn't do it.
I mean, one of my main critiques of the school system is its incredible structural resemblance to prison. And, you know, you hear people talk about like the school to prison pipeline, which is about like criminalizing behaviors and stuff like that. But also just the environment of a school is very jail-like the way that we do it. Unless you send your kid to something like Montessori or Waldorf schools, which are completely different.
Right.
But like, I mean, the right down to the fact that a lot of people who are contracted to build schools also build prisons. And there's a lot of crossover there.
Right. So we need to maybe our business or our company could be the prisons to schools pipeline. But no, but I mean, it's funny, but like seriously, like you know, like the post prison education system, a lot like a way to like, you know, obviously you start out with like partnering with like community colleges or whatever and trying to find like create programs. And I'm sure these already exist, right? There's lots of people who are interested in helping people who have been in prison and helping them navigate getting back into society because it sucks, right? Like once you've got that label, like jobs are hard and it doesn't matter why you were in there. Like we already know that lots of people are basically imprisoned for stupid ass reasons
or shit they didn't do. There's a lot of people locked up.
That's what I mean by I mean it's stupid ass reasons. Is it's like no one should be locked up for this, like even if you know it, like property damage, like I just find that so fucked. Like the way that our police force is basically like, you know, like property damage is a big part, or property protection is a big part of their task, and not like the protection of human life over everything else and making sure that people aren't killing each other. Like,
this is very interesting because I've noticed something recently, which is that there's a difference between destructive behavior and violence.
Yep.
You can't be violent towards an inanimate object. You can only be violent towards people.
Right.
Or other living things.
Yeah.
Otherwise, what you're doing is just property damage. And that's not the same thing.
Yeah. And to be clear, I don't think people shouldn't be held accountable for their damage to other people's property. Like,
sure.
It's, you know,
but you shouldn't be locked in a cage for it.
Yeah. And that's not, I don't know that that's the place where we're going to have that conversation about like who should be allowed to own the bulk of like natural resources, which is property and which is property, basically.
You know? So have you heard about the rights of nature movement?
Mm-mm.
So this is something that, like, I mean, calling it the rights of nature movement is like a latecomer white person consideration, right? Mm-hmm. Like other people, lots of indigenous cultures the world over have always considered the rights of nature. It's not like a thing that's separated out and defined by the terms the rights of nature.
Right.
But there are countries, municipalities, entities around the world who are starting to codify the rights of nature into the legal systems of these municipalities and countries, such that I think it was a Spanish river that was just granted the same rights basically as people. Let's see, river rights. on March 1st, 2024, the Serra de Otis City Council in Galicia, I think I pronounced that right, but I'm unfortunately not capable of speaking Spanish very well. So in Galicia, they unanimously adopted the Declaration of Rights of the Tins River, which recognizes the river as a subject of rights within the scope of the municipality, making it the first river in Spain to have its rights officially recognized.
Yeah.
So this is like recognizing non-human entities as agents who are afforded rights in the way that people are afforded rights.
Okay.
Which I think is really fucking interesting. So this is from ecojurisprudence.org. And if you just search like rights of Spanish River, you might find this. So the declaration establishes 10 rights of the Tins River, including 1, to life and existence as an ecosystem in balance. 2, to be clean and free from pollution. So there's your negative rights, right? Be yep. free from rather than the right to do something. 3, to regeneration and evolve naturally without interruptions caused by human activity. 4, to protection and conservation. 5, the right to flow freely. 6, the right to be respected. 7, the right to maintain and recover its banks and riverside forests. 8, the intergenerational cultural and biocultural heritage that it houses. 9, to reparation and restitution for any damage, past, present, or future, that has been caused by human action or omission and that violates the rights established in this declaration. So this is not the only municipality who has done this. There are others yeah. around the world. And this to me is like a really meaningful shift from how we as people can consider the things around us and what their utility is to us and what rights we have to them. Right? Like yeah. It's so much of the world that we currently occupy regards nature as something to be extracted.
Yeah. No, it's
and
tough.
Not something that has its own agency in its own right. And I think to overlook the agency of components of nature and the natural world is like a huge mistake. Because it's just a big circle. It's like a fishbowl. Anything you do on one side of the fishbowl is eventually going to affect the other side of the fishbowl. And so if you are shitty and extractive towards nature and you are a part of nature, then you are shitty and extractive towards yourself, ultimately. Yeah. And so from like, here's my argument from the selfish perspective, right? If you give a shit about your long-term survival, stop being extractive in relationship to nature. But I just like this because something that, you know, if you afford rights to some component of nature, then yeah. you can advocate legally on behalf of that. And right. you can, that's great. I'm all about this. This kind yeah. of shift in thinking is the sort of thing that probably needed to happen like 100 years ago for it to like make a difference to our long-term survival.
Yeah.
But like, I don't know. I think it's good stuff.
I think this is like kind of the great tragedy of where we are in the US right now politically, right? Is that I think that people don't realize what's really going on, which is that I mean some people do, but you know, all the fucking hate and all that shit sucks for sure. And that's a yeah. part of it. I'm not dismissing that. It's just that in the background, what's happening is all of our public resources that generations have set up to, like, our government is a public resource, right? Like, you know, yeah. access to healthcare, support, having roads, having a police force, whether you agree with it or not. And I that's fucked, but like, you know, having all of these things, having a military, having roads, having social structures, having public environments where we exist as a society, all of that is being eroded by these rich people. They're all yep. taking it away.
Yep.
And they're doing it through the mechanisms of dismantling our government by getting themselves elected and making trade deals or whatever. And like mm-hmm. continually skewing the public landscape towards supporting them, firing their dick rockets into space. Like it's, yes. You know, my cock is a rocket. Check it out. Woo.
they should just call them cockets instead cockets. Of rockets.
Yeah, exactly. And it's a tragedy because there's, like, we just, it's also super dumb and short-sighted on their part. We keep talking about this. It's like,
yep.
you could have so much more wealth sitting on top of a fucking massively well-functioning society where everyone is living well in their, you know, in their middle class life, where they have access to resources and food mm-hmm. and the ability to make enough wealth personally to support themselves and their family and spend their time, you know, doing joyous things and all this stuff, and like reducing the, like, you know, reducing the size of the lower classes. I mean, fuck, I hate that word, but you know what I mean? Like,
yeah,
like
yeah.
reducing the space where people are just left in destitution.
Right.
Because now you have all these individuals who are like, fuck yeah, let's like fucking get this economy humming. I mean, I don't know that we should be living in capitalism anyway. And God forbid, like we, you know, I would say otherwise, but like,
yeah.
you know, the Lord above and all my other fucking atheist jokes that I like to tell.
Yes.
Anyway, it's, you know, anyway, long story short, I'll get off my soapbox, but I just feel really frustrated. My partner said the other day, she was like, we were hanging out late and she apologized later. And I'm like, you don't need to apologize. But she's got on a real tear about the idea that, in her opinion, and I think this is a perfectly great opinion, which is that if we're going to consider ourselves civilized, we feed all the children. Like yeah. more than that, really, we just feed our entire population. No one is ever starving. Like, food is a solved problem. Food is a political yep. issue. There is yes, more than enough is. Food for everyone on the planet, more than yep. enough. And it's not like it's a political issue. Like, these people starving in yeah, other countries, they're starving because dictators are preventing them getting the fucking food that other countries are trying to give them.
Fair.
Like, you know, just for example, right? Like, I can't think of any mm-hmm. specific ones, but her argument was like, you can't consider yourself a civilized country unless you feed all the kids. And that's something that she was arguing is like, you know, something that California has really done right is we managed to get the school food programs in place where every child gets a breakfast and a lunch
yeah.
and some snacks to go home. Like, that's, you know, like, the, yeah. like, you know, there's problems there, which is like, you know, they live in a shitty house where their parents are stealing food from them or stealing the money, you know, whatever, like they're, but, mm-hmm. but they can go to school and then get two fucking meals a day.
Right. Yeah. It's an issue. It's a issue of, social distribution and not yep. an issue of scarcity.
Right. Yeah.
Any scarcity of food is, an engineered false scarcity.
Right.
There's like, this is something that's happening in Minneapolis right now, right? Mm-hmm. We've got this giant trash burner.
Yeah.
And all over the world, people are shutting down trash burners because it's like, wow, this is actually a terrible fucking idea.
Mm-hmm.
Like, a good way to get rid of trash is not to burn it, because burning it doesn't actually get rid of anything. It just converts right. it into yeah. even more harmful components and materials. And then you have an even bigger problem of what to do with what's left behind in a concentrated evil form.
Mm-hmm.
And so one of the things that's happening in the argument over how and when to shut down this trash burner is, well, what are we going to do with all the trash that goes into the trash burner? Well, at least 30% of what gets burnt up in that trash burner
yeah.
is food that could be organically recycled into dirt or compost and
yep.
then put back into the system in a circular biological system. Right.
Like, there's some fixes here that could work.
Yeah. And so, like, a bunch of the shit going in there shouldn't be going in there in the first place. And if the city of Minneapolis really gave a shit about this, what they would do is take some of the money that is dedicated to keeping that trash burner running, and it costs like $30 million a year. It's constantly in the red. Mm-hmm. It needs all kinds of maintenance because it's old technology. It should just be shut down. But like, what you should do is, instead of paying money to keep that bad solution going, you should take some of that money, put it into programming that supports every fucking restaurant in the city of Minneapolis recycling their organics through the system that is already set up that we all collectively pay for, whether we use it or not. Like, the city mm-hmm. of Minneapolis trash collection and utilities are managed by the city. So like, I don't have to hire a trash hauler to come privately haul my trash somewhere. The city of Minneapolis says, as a component of you living here, you are going to be served by the city of Minneapolis for waste disposal. You get your water through the city. When your water goes down the drain, you pay the fee for that through the city, and your trash gets picked up. And whether you like it or not, you are already on your trash bill paying for organics recycling. Mm-hmm. If you don't use it, you're paying for something you're not using.
Right.
And they tried to incentivize it that way, right? But it's like, okay, I always recycle my organics. I feed some of it to my worms, the stuff mm-hmm. that I can feed to them. The stuff I can't feed to worms, like citrus, which kills worms,
yep.
I put in the organics recycling, and it goes into this massive composting facility. And we have we have one of the most amazing composting systems in the Midwest. Like, it's really spectacular, and it creates all of this great stuff. And we're going to get an anaerobic digester and all this stuff. Right.
Yeah.
So like, one way to shut down the trash burner is to simply redirect the trash going into it to a better alternative, which already exists.
Mm-hmm.
But for some reason, the city is not compelling nor encouraging restaurants and every single private entity in the, like, for example, if you live in a multifamily dwelling, like an apartment building
yeah.
or a duplex or whatever, and your landlord is not organizing a program for you to access this organics recycling, you just don't have it. And more than, I think it's like 54% of the population of Minneapolis rents rather than owns a single family home.
Right? Oh, interesting. Yeah.
So like, if the city of Minneapolis made a concerted effort to encourage, support, and demand that restaurants and multifamily dwellings engage in the organics recycling, we would serve 1/2 to 1/3 of the trash crisis that necessitates, allegedly, a trash burner. It's that fucking easy.
Yeah.
Half the problem disappears overnight because you've just sent it in a different direction that's not killing people. And like, this is kind of like, this is me telling you how to live. Recycle your fucking food.
Uh-huh.
Like, we have so much food waste. I mean, that's like, that's the other thing, right? Like, there's yeah. so much food waste. Like, there's so much food waste. How do you even prevent it from becoming food waste and then steer it off the path before you have to make the decision? Do I organic recycle this or do I put it in a trash burner?
Right.
Like, why do we have so much food waste? Why, when I go to the fucking restaurant, am I buying a meal that is actually like 3 or 4 meals for a single person? Like, it's 4,000 fucking calories you're serving me. Mm-hmm. And you're doing that because you think that in order to convince people that it's worth it to eat out, you have to give them massive portions of food. I don't want to eat this thing 4 times in a row. I want to eat it 1 time, and I want you to give me 1/4 as much. And if you do persist in insisting that I deserve a plate of food that's actually 4 meals in 1 and I leave it behind, I want you to fucking recycle it.
Mm-hmm.
Holy shit. We're doing everything wrong.
Doing everything wrong.
Yeah. Well, now what?
The research department has provided
Excellent.
Some colors of the day.
Oh my God.
Which will 100% change your life.
Oh, these are fantastic.
I know, right?
Yes. This is a great contrast.
Yeah.
So we have two sort of what I would think of as almost like neutral colors here.
Yeah.
One of them is like a dark chocolate, like a maroony dark chocolate color.
Yep.
And then the other one is like a grayish, like, it's just kind of like a flat gray. Like, there's not, it doesn't stand out to me as more red, more green, or more blue particularly. And
nope.
The RGB says, okay, so we've got the first color, anti-magnetic weasel.
So yeah, this is a really popular color just today. So
yes, just today.
Yeah.
This is like the most popular color today.
Yep.
Except for the other color.
Well,
that's
yes.
most popular with it.
Yeah. Well, these two colors together. Right. But anyway, together. Anti-magnetic weasel, you were saying.
Yep. The red, green, blue RGB values are red is 40, green is 29, blue is 20. So they're kind of like the green and the blue are almost balanced with each other. It is more red than it is green or blue. But
yes.
it is very, very brown.
Yes. Yep.
It looks like an unwrapped chocolate bar.
It does, 100%.
To me.
Yep, same.
The hexadecimal code for it, which is a unique tag that indicates a particular color, which you can, like, they're universal, so you can type this into your browser in the Googler and it will just show you this color, so you can see what we're looking at.
Yep.
It's hashtag 281, the letter D or delta, 14, 281D14.
Yeah.
Type it in with a hashtag in front of it. You'll get this color. You can see what we're talking about.
You'll be
about.
Able to look at anti-magnetic weasel for yourself.
Yes.
Yeah.
And then it's complementary color.
Yep.
Because if you just have a color all by itself, like Pantone does.
Yes.
Pantone's like screwing you out of a full human experience by only giving you one color and only doing it once a year.
Yep.
It's ridiculous. They're such underachievers.
Yeah.
So you need a contrasting color for the first color to mean anything at all. Otherwise, it all might as well be nothing. So the second color, disarranged sidewinder, which is a great name for a color like this.
It's 100%. Yeah, this is a great color. Yeah.
This one is also very balanced in terms of its red, green, and blue, like even more so than anti-magnetic weasel.
Yep.
Disarranged sidewinder, Roy G. Biv, is 215 226 235. So like the red, the green, and the blue are almost entirely balanced in this color, which is why it's so like gray and plain, because it's all in there. And the hexadecimal is hashtag D delta 7 E echo 2 E echo B beta. So D7 E2 E B, as in boy.
Yeah, so you'd throw that whole starting with the pound sign in there, and you'll get to look at this directly. You'll see the disarranged sidewinder. It's a complementary color to anti-magnetic weasel, and they play really well off of each other. If you're looking for like a high contrast experience, this is your color set.
So good. Yep, these are the colors of the day. If you need two colors for any kind of color scheme you're working on, these are the colors. They are the perfect best colors of the day for this day today.
Can't go wrong.
July 9th, Wednesday, year of Oh Lord, 2025.
Yes.
Oh my God. I have a book recommendation.
Okay.
I read a book called, let me grab it here so I don't get the title wrong, send you on a wild goose chase for a book that doesn't exist. It is called The Unaccountability Machine.
Oh, nice.
Subtitle, Why Big Systems Make Terrible Decisions and How the World Lost Its Mind.
Oh, that's fantastic.
This talks about like when you call for help.
Yes.
Like, I need to talk to somebody about the fact that my fucking whatever, right? Like, I anticipate that this is going to happen. I bought a fancy air purifier because I live near an industrial site that is the most polluted site in all of Minnesota in terms of air quality, and it's slowly poisoning me with formaldehyde, which is definitely going to give me cancer someday. And so I was like, well, if I have to seal up the house because the outside air quality is terrible, I now have a filter that will filter out VOCs and particulate down to well below 2.5 microns, which is super tiny. And for some reason, the light indicator, the flashing LED light on this thing that lets me know when I need to change the filter, will not stop blinking. And I made the mistake of buying an extra filter. I am on the 3-month filter plan, which is where they automatically send you a new filter every 3 months, which is generally speaking fine. Like, that's plenty. But the light started blinking and I was like, ooh, maybe because of all of the Canadian wildfires recently, I burned through this filter faster than 3 months, and I need to get another one. Highly plausible, right? So I ordered an extra filter, paid extra for it, got it shipped here, put it in, light kept blinking. So it's definitely not the case that I need a new filter that is making the light blink. So now I have to call them. And what I anticipate happening when I call this company on the phone is exactly what this book talks about, the unaccountability machine. I'm going to get a phone tree. And the phone tree is going to make me push a bunch of buttons. And then it's going to drop me off into a black hole where it's impossible for me to get a real human on the phone, and no one will be able to help me because the decision-making process for how to solve this problem will be broken and offloaded to something that is not human.
Right, right.
And if I have an unusual circumstance, it is even more likely that this system will not serve me, because any outliers in a broken system are things that wreck the system and not raise an alarm that somebody should look more closely at them.
Yeah.
And that's what this whole book talks about. And now that I've read this book, I see it everywhere.
Yeah.
And there's like the guy who wrote this, his name is Dan Davies. He talks about how like sufficiently complicated systems have to have sort of like five tiers of organization. And each of those tiers closes a loop within the system for when something goes wrong to send feedback to the appropriate decision-making entity and then trigger that entity to look closely at what the problem is and find an out-of-the-box solution for it, right? Mm-hmm. And he talks about how like some of the greatest difficulties and problems and failures that we've had are because somewhere in that five-tiered system of feedback, the loop is broken. Mm-hmm. And there's no accountability at that point. And he talks a lot about the thing that really jumped out at me about this book is the concept of an accountability sink, mm-hmm. which is kind of like a heat sink. If you know what a heat sink is, when you run like electronics or whatever, they generate heat because of all those electrons moving around. And you have to put the excess heat somewhere so it doesn't like burn out the system in like a runaway feedback loop.
Right.
And accountability is the same way. Like you need like part of why shit is so broken right now everywhere mm-hmm. is because we have built so many unaccountability measures into what we're doing systematically so that there are accountability sinks where like it's the sort of thing where like something goes completely wrong, like Boeing aircraft, right?
Yep.
They're falling out of the fucking sky because they built a bunch of accountability sinks into that corporate operation. And when something goes wrong, it's nobody's fault.
Right, right. Well, the accountability sink there is to absorb all the accountability and not resolve anything. Like it doesn't, to shift it, to basically take all the blame and all the fucking,
Right, which is why they've murdered a bunch of people. And not faced, and zero people from Boeing have faced
they don't any have, kind there's of no accountability. Whatsoever.
So I just thought, I was like, man, this explains an awful lot about why shit's so fucked today. And once you read the book, you can't unsee it. Like it pops out everywhere. I'm dealing with this at the company that I work for right now, and I'm thinking about quitting because I'm like, there's accountability sinks all the fucking all over this place. And it's interesting too, because accountability sinks maybe, but don't always require somebody deliberately creating an accountability sink.
Right.
Sometimes it's just like a thing that happens because you don't take pains not to have it happen. Anyway, it's a great book. I just finished it. So I thought, oh, I should mention it before I completely forget and move on to my next book, which is about black swan events and how they're becoming more and more common and no longer black swans. And a black swan event is something that's unforeseeable and outside of the normal scope of like, we can anticipate this. And so like, it's sort of, again, it's kind of like, it's like a related concept of black swan where it's like, well, we could not have anticipated that this would happen. And so we were unprepared for it.
Right. Right.
But like you can get to that point deliberately or accidentally.
Well, that sounds, like a fun podcast topic, actually. Maybe one of the next ones we can talk about that. I think we're pushing our limits. We're not allowed to go over. No, I'm just joking. There's no rules.
Right.
There's no rules. Here. But we did do the colors of the day.
And no accountability.
Yes. Yeah. And, I have to go be a responsible adult now. So I'm going to say,
fuck.
Oh, thank you, everybody.
Well, to balance that out, I'll go do something really irresponsible now.
Yes. Thank you. I appreciate
that.
Okay.
All right.
Okay. Bye.